You are about to participate in the most ambitious culinary experiment ever imagined.
This competition is going to test everything.
Adapt quickly to anything. I mean anything. The wildest day of your life starts right now.
All new 24 and 24 Last Chef Standing. Sunday night at 8 on Food Network. Stream on Max.
Welcome to the Tribe of Two, the officially unofficial podcast for Star Wars The Mandalorian on Disney Plus. I'm Jim.
I'm Aaron.
And today we're talking about Season 2, Episode 3, Chapter 11, titled The Heiress. You know how I know that? It's not by looking at Disney Plus, which does not tell you the names of any of these episodes, except for Season 1 episodes, which, I mean, it's fair. You know, it takes a long time to go in, update those titles, like, give them a season. Give them a full-ass season.
They had their intern who was going to come in and transcribe those, add it to the system, but then COVID hit. It's a lot of difficulties. A lot of things could go wrong.
So it's up to me to look in the episode, make sure that I'm not writing any notes during the title sequence, which is otherwise completely inconsequential, to pick out the title, and it's called The Heiress. And this is all me, like, tongue-in-cheek apologizing for not knowing the title the first episode that we started this up. You got me. Thank you for pointing out that these titles are in the episodes. Aaron, what'd you think about this episode?
It's a good episode of The Mandalorian. I liked my episode of, Mando and Commander, the Mon Cal Chronicles. This show is a Saturday morning cartoon serial, toy selling show, cartoon. With just a lot of style and some interesting twists and a huge budget and all the Star Wars lore to draw from. So and on that basis, every one of these episodes is going to be enjoyable. On the other hand, every episode is going to have the Mando to go wanting to do something. And then someone says, oh, I can help you that, but it's going to cost you. You're going to have to help me on my mission. Mm-hmm. And then the episode will begin. So it's like, that is the engine. That's the formula that makes this stuff work. I think there are episodes that are really, really good and like next level. Like, I think the season premiere was one of those things where it's like, God, that Krayt Dragon battle.
Yeah. And I thought last kind episode of like, was that. I really enjoyed last episode.
The spider battle. Uh-huh. This one a little bit less so. Like I felt like, these particular Mandalorians, with their color coordinated outfits, gave me a little bit of like, especially in their penchant for manual hand-to-hand combat, especially in the first half of the episode, a little Power Ranger-y.
Okay.
But, and some of the action is going to be very Saturday morning goofy. Like, instead of some cool way to get out of a situation, you'll just have a heroic character charging forward in invincible armor that chuck grenades 3 foot further than he could have, I guess. But it's fun. Baby Yoda's really cute. The Mandalorian looks cool as hell.
I'm sure there's like a procedure. This is probably in like Clone Wars episode, season 15, episode 9. It probably tells you exactly how. Is there like some electrolysis going on to color the Beskar metals different colors? Like, what did they do? Because as I saw, they just melted down and shape it. Can you make it green? Can you make it blue?
You can make it blue.
How does that work?
Sure. Sharpies.
Inquiring they just color minds.
Over it, and then every time they have a battle, they have to resharpie it because that just the turbo lasers just take that right off the Beskar.
Yeah,
permanent marker my ass.
After the Empire collapsed, the Sharpies are hard to get.
You want those pre-Imperial Sharpies that really can stick to Beskar.
Those new Republic Sharpies, they just don't.
Yeah, they banned the dye that's based on the bones of Wookiee children that just really makes it bond, and it's no good. Not as effective.
I'm with you. I don't think this episode was quite as enjoyable as the last two, but I really do love the language that the Mandalorian is building, and it's building it with some cheesy things. Like, look, I don't really love when Mandalorians drop out of the sky completely unannounced with no real indication as to how they knew where Mando was, how they you know, how they got wind of him in the first place, like all those things. Mm-hmm. But with the Mandalorians, outside of Mando, they're really leaning into that language, where the Mandalorians are just a group of warriors who are able to drop in at any time to any situation and clean house. And
yeah, they got jetpacks, man. They're going to use them.
Yeah. Yeah.
Death from above, baby.
And like, if you look back at the previous season and this season, every time the Mandalorians come in, it's they're drop troopers, right? They're just dropping out of the sky unannounced, right, and kicking ass. And they're consistent with that. It works. It's good language of cinema type stuff.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. And I said that each episode might have like a clever adult twist. I thought the one that really had me sitting forward on the edge of my seat is to reveal that the Mandalorian is unwittingly a member of this, like, kind of seen by other Mandalorians as a hokey cult.
Dude.
Like they're puritanical early American Christians, you know, doing Salem witch trials and shit. I thought that was a really cool twist, and I'm very curious to see how the Mandalorian struggles with that, because it's clearly going to be a struggle. You know, he's got this way. Also, it's a pathway for Pedro Pascal to get his face shown, because clearly it's not intrinsic to being a Mandalorian that you can't reveal your head, your face, I should say.
Yeah, that's the thing. Part. It's part of that old way, right? And that's the thing. I guess when I went into the show, I was thinking, okay, well, reveal more about the Mandalorian culture. But I was thinking of it from more of like just telling the audience more about a culture that was unified and, like, you know, destroyed by the Empire, stuff like that. But it seems like there's going to be political and religious fracturings of the Mandalorians,
which
and
is cool. That's
it adds so much nuance, so much interest to that culture that I guess I didn't expect from a show that, like we said, is basically a kid's Saturday morning cartoon in the flesh.
Yeah. Yeah. It's like, you know, in Star Trek, you know, what's a liberal Klingon look like? What's a conservative Klingon? What's a moderate centrist Klingon look like? You don't know, because as far as you know, every Klingon from Klingon is essentially the exact same goddamn person with the same creed, the same. I know there's that it's slightly more complex in the weeds of Star Trek, but like, yeah, like the idea that like there's not. I just thought it's great. I thought it's a nice twist. That's something I'm kind of personally interested in as a person who's had a similar realization about the culture I was born into.
Uh-huh.
I thought that was really cool. And I hope they continue to find ways to bring that, like him wrestling with the concept of like, oh, God, what is it? What does it mean to be, you know, I'm a tribe of two. I could do whatever the hell I want, you know, as far as setting up a culture or a creed. So that's exciting.
Until Mama Hammer comes back and demands her Beskar back.
Yeah, that's that could be a problem.
Yeah,
gets stripped of his horn patch, no longer a tribe. Yep. What would we do for a podcast? We're no longer a tribe of two. We're just the Mandalorian podcast in exile.
Yeah, why not?
We're getting geared up for the 6th annual Summer Badass Fest. And while we're working on a slate of Apex badass films to enjoy, we've got an early action-packed announcement to make.
Just like last year, we're kicking off Badass Season with a live movie watch and podcast recording. We've rented out a theater for connoisseurs of action films and Bald Move fans that just want to have a great time.
Unlike last year, this year's movie is top secret. Hush, hush. No hints, except it's incredibly badass. It stars an absolute icon of the genre. We're willing to bet most of you haven't seen it, and it's going to be an incredible viewing experience with a packed house of Bald Movers.
Those of you who came to last year's screening of Total Recall know what a party it was. And those of you who didn't, now's your chance to experience it. Meet me and Jim. Order some custom movie-themed drinks at the theater's full bar. Then watch us record the full podcast for the movie. We reserved a venue over twice the size as last year, but seating is still limited.
It's happening Friday, June 21st at 7 p.m. in our hometown of Cincinnati. Get full details and buy tickets at baldmove.com/live.
Cincinnati's actually a pretty great city to visit, and we've got lots of details for side adventures on our event page as well. The Reds are playing the Boston Red Sox in their fantastic Riverside Stadium. the thrills of King's Island just minutes away, and I'll be leading a kayak trip down the scenic Little Miami River on Saturday.
Again, get full details and get your tickets now on our Badass Fest 6 page at baldmove.com/live.
Here are the highlights coming up this week on Bald Move.
House of the Dragon Season 2 is coming up sooner than you think. And to get us all back in that Leal state of mind, Aaron and I have teamed up with Maester Anthony to bring you coordinated coverage, new and old. For the next 10 weeks leading up to Season 2, Maester Anthony will be releasing an episode of his Season 1 coverage on the Hot D podcast. He originally recorded and released it exclusively on his Double Dragon podcast, so while it's retro coverage, it's almost certainly new to you.
In addition, each Friday, Jim and I will be reading the relevant sections of George Martin's Targaryen history book, Fire and Blood, so that we can compare and contrast it to that week's episode of Hot D Season 1. So grab a copy of Fire and Blood and read along with us if you're so inclined. Just don't read ahead, unless you enjoy spoilers.
If that's not enough to satisfy your craving for fantasy entertainment, well, you're in luck. We recently watched King Arthur, Legend of the Sword, which is Guy Ritchie's uniquely stylish and anachronistic riff on the King Arthur legend. Yes, Guy Ritchie took on the most famous of all English legends and did it with huge ambitions. Sadly, or perhaps thankfully, depending on your tastes, his ambitions were cut short by meager audience interest. Join us for the podcast this Tuesday as we discuss why that might have been and whether this retelling is any good.
You can find these and many other great podcasts by searching for Bald Move Pulp or Bald Move Prestige in your favorite podcast app.
All right, you ready to get into the recap?
Yeah, let's do it.
We start off with Mando piloting the Razor Crest in for a manual re-entry because his guidance system is busted. He quite nearly lands it. Almost, but I guess he just, like, one of those landing pads just kind of falls off into the water at the last second, and the whole Razor Crest goes under.
I thought it was hilarious, like, the Mon Calamari's reaction to it. They have like little kid stakes where, you know, oh, the Mandalorian needs the frog mom to pull back on this throttle, but now Baby Yoda's left alone with his eggs. Oh, is he going to horf some more?
Yeah, I expected them to do more with that. They just kind of have her glance back a couple times at the eggs, even though I thought she was going to have to like make a choice between holding the, you know, throttle back.
I thought,
or whatever.
And she did. She braces at some point. She's able to brace both. But like I said, it's these are kid stakes. You know, like if you got your 8-year old watching, they're genuinely gripped up about like, oh, we're going to get to see Baby Yoda eat some more eggs. What do we feel about that?
I mean, I'm cool on that.
But yeah, I thought it was neat. Now they described this. I looked it up on Wikipedia that this moon of Trask is an estuary moon.
Yeah.
Do you know what an estuary is, Jim?
I thought it was a coastal region, which doesn't make any sense given what we see.
Yeah, it's a partially enclosed coastal body of brackish water with one or more rivers or streams flowing into it with free connections to the open sea. It forms a transition zone between river environments and maritime environments. How do you have an estuary planet? Where are the rivers? Where are the seas? Like, it's like how you have a whole planet is just a boundary zone between, like, let's say this is the beach planet. Mm-hmm. You mean a water planet? No, it's a beach planet. You mean a desert planet with like some? No, it's a beach planet. How much more can I? It's a fucking beach planet. Like, okay.
Right.
All right. This
yeah.
This is an estuary planet.
Best I could tell, there was no land. It was all like, these structures built atop the ocean.
It's all estuary. It's an estuary planet.
It's an ocean planet.
Land on
let's
a big
let's
estuary.
Not get it mixed up. It's an ocean planet.
Yeah. Yeah. But maybe it's brackish. Somehow there's more fret. It's a little bit less. It's not as salty as you'd expect from an ocean planet.
Yeah. Maybe. Oh, God, the mosquitoes. No thanks. I will say, like, there are two really cool things here. A, what they're doing with the Razor Crest. It's basically the new Millennium Falcon, which it just keeps getting the shit kicked out of it. And by the end of this episode, God, it's strung together with Mon Calamari spit and bungee cords. Literal no shit bungee cords. And tarps. Yeah. Like, wow.
One thing I've been doing for fun on Twitter is posting, like last week I posted a picture of the Winnebago from Spaceballs. This week I found another RV who's just, it was in a very similar condition in terms of bondoing and baling wire and stuff. And like, I'm trying to find real world equivalents to the Razor Crest, but the Razor Crest has seen better days. Like,
yeah,
is this going to be the thing of the season? Is the Razor Crest is just going to get beat up and kind of fixed and beat up? And
it seems like it, but when Boba Fett shows up with the Slave One, what hope would he have?
He's going to style on our Mandalorian here. It's going to be bad.
Yeah,
I think our hero is going to be saying Dank Ferrick a lot.
He says a lot in this episode. A lot of people do.
Yeah, it's fun. So, Katie Sackhoff is here. Are you a fracking kind of guy? Or are you a Dank Ferrick kind of guy? Do you think Dank Ferrick can overtake fracking when it comes to fictional swear words?
Look, I'm not an adherent to the old way. I think there's a place for both Dank Ferrick and Fracken in this universe.
How about Dank Fracken?
Dank Fracken. Hell yeah.
Sounds like a heavy metal band based out of South Dakota.
Oh God. I love the,
anyway,
when the Razor Crest is lifted out of the water, they've got this crane that's built out of like an old AT-AT frame.
So cool.
Which is another really cool bit of world building that they do. Like, this is a post-Imperial, like, right after the Imperial collapse, all of this stuff is being repurposed. The attention to detail in that regard is phenomenal on this show.
Yeah, sell off the surplus stuff. Now, I wonder if it, because in Rogue One, they introduced this concept of the cargo AT-ATs. Mm. Like, they just are like, you know, like those helicopters. Have you seen those helicopters? They're like the cargo helicopters, and it's just like a cockpit, yeah, and a tail, and it's just like completely cut out in the middle, so it has a crane kind of thing.
Yeah.
I wonder if it's like a purpose-built Imperial like thing, or like what you said, it's surplus. Like, hey, you know, yeah, what? We don't want these terror weapons anymore. Let's chop the top of them off and people can weld whatever they do. But it makes sense for an estuary planet that you need these big things to walk around and, uh-huh, crane stuff off the ocean floor, recover stuff.
Yeah, I guess the water doesn't seem too deep. You know what I would like to see is an ocean-based Imperial vehicle. Like, because you're not gonna take over this quote-unquote estuary planet with a bunch of AT-ATs, right? Like, that doesn't make any sense in this terrain. So what does an attack vehicle or a scout vehicle from the Empire look like specifically designed for quote-unquote estuary ocean planets?
Yeah. Does the Imperial Navy have an actual Navy?
Yeah.
is the question. Do they have boats? Because we know Star Wars now has boats. We saw one this episode. I imagine there's some kind of light attack craft. Although I renew my objection to the concept of boats, is that wouldn't you just have like an Imperial attack cruiser just, you know, like just fly?
But you could say the same of AT-ATs, right? Like, what use is it to have something walking on the ground?
Oh, I guess here's the thing. Yeah, planetary shield. You get a water world with a planetary shield. You gotta land something to take it down. You need some boats.
It's true.
That's the case for it.
So yeah, they pull that the Razor Crest out of the water. Mando pays Mon Calamari worker to make it space worthy again. And Frog Lady's reunited with another frog person. I think it's her husband, right, that she talked about previously. Very happy to see that the eggs survived, or at least the ones that Baby Yoda didn't eat. And they point Mando to an inn where he can find other Mandalorians. And we see that someone is watching them from the shadows.
Oh, a hooded lady. Is she Sith? She might be Sith.
We'll find out. Find out by the end of this episode. And then they go to the inn.
Also, Hungry Baby Yoda. We got to point out the cute stuff. I thought the frog couple is really cute. Like, even though we can't understand them, they speak the language frog. I thought the way they're like, you know, hugging and kissing each other was really adorable. Mm-hmm. And, you know, Baby Yoda being hungry, his hungry wilted ears face is premium Baby Yoda.
It is. So they go to the inn, and Mando bribes the bartender into giving him some info. He calls over Quarren, who claims that he can take Mando to the others of his kind only a few hours away, and they set off.
Did you know anything about the Quarrens before this episode, or do you know anything about the Quarrens after the episode?
I mean, other than they are, like, their name and that they've been around Star Wars for a while, no.
So they share, they're the species that co-evolved on Mon Calamari with the Mon Calamari. And their big thing is canonically, they're just kind of assholes. Like surly is a word used a lot with them. And apparently they share the piece on Mon Cal pretty uneasily with the Mon Calamari. Maybe because it's not called, you know, Calamari Quarren or Quarren Calamari. It's just Mon Calamari. Like, hey, we're here too, assholes.
Yeah.
But yeah, like one of the defining features going back to like the RPGs and stuff is the Quarrens are just kind of surly. They just have bad tempers. And I thought that was definitely came across this episode. They're very gruff, quick to acts of violence and anger and whatnot. So yeah.
And I want to say this is the first time that certainly I've seen an ocean planet or an estuary planet. And so it was cool to see all of these, you know, the mix of like Mon Calamari and Quarrens, and these frog people chose to live here because obviously they'd want to be in an aquatic environment. It was just a neat change of pace. You know, we've seen deserts and jungles so many times.
Although wasn't Kamino where the cloners live, was that an ocean world or did they just, was that base on an ocean?
You might be right about that. Kamino might be.
Because if you landed in Hawaii, you'd be like, oh my God, Earth is an ocean planet. And you're not actually that wrong. You know, Earth is pretty damn close to being an ocean world. So,
yeah, I'm not certain if Kamino is actually all ocean, but maybe it is. And you get this nice cute scene with Baby Yoda trying to eat some gruel or whatever passes for food in Trask.
I saw it coming out of the hoses. I'm like, what is this lumpy ass gruel? And it turns out there's living things in the gruel.
Mm-hmm.
Mando has to save Baby Yoda twice from food this episode.
Yeah, for sure.
Might be a recurring theme.
So this trip on the boat that they set off in turns out to be a trap. And Mando and Baby Yoda are dropped into a Mamacore pit. And Baby Yoda's eaten. And then three Mandalorians show up out of nowhere, save them both. And to his shock, when they all take off their helmets, which is something that doesn't happen in his world, he asks what's up with that. And they explain that he is a child of the Watch, which is a cult of religious zealots who broke away from Mandalorian society with the goal of reestablishing the old way, according to them. Do you know anything more about this?
I want to talk about the Mamacore real quick because this is one of these new, the WPMs per minute, the Wikipedias per minute. This is a brand new invented creature for the Star Wars universe.
Yeah.
And I thought it sounded like some kind of aesthetic revolving around like moms.
Mm-hmm.
Like, oh yeah, I'm into Vaporwave Mamacore.
Hell yeah.
Oh yeah.
It's all those, it's every single like inspirational message you've seen painted in a dining room, on a dining room wall.
Pray, yeah.
Yeah. That's Mamacore.
Mamacore.
That movie Mom and Dad. We talked about how we just watched this. Both just watched this movie Mom and Dad with Nicolas Cage from like 2018.
Oh yeah, where the parents turn into zombies. Yeah.
Their kitchen dining room area is so Mamacore.
Hardcore Mamacore. What were you asking about the Mandalorian culture or something?
Yeah, do you know anything more about this child of the Watch, this cult of religious zealots?
I think this is all brand new. Now, I have started watching the Clone Wars episodes that our lore historian forwarded to us or mentioned. It's season 7, episodes 9 through 12. I'm halfway through that saga. So far, no child of the Watch. But I think this is actually a new concept, or we'd have heard about it before, the fact that there is some kind of... and also, this is a brilliant explanation for all the different takes on Mandalorians, too. Because like this particular version of Mandalorian, it was not something I'd been familiar with. And I know that there was a lot of, you know, we've seen Mandalorians from Mandalore royalty in these Clone Wars episodes taking their masks off. So it's like, what the hell? You can't take your mask off. It's a neat explanation. Well, these are essentially, Pentecostal, Southern Baptist revival Mandalorians that are taking it back. You know, getting rid of all the pagan influences on their Mandalorian religion and going Mamacore with it, getting back to basics. So I don't know, but I'm really looking forward to learning more about it.
Me too. Yeah, it's the most exciting thing of the episode for me. The other thing that probably excites a lot of Star Wars fans, people who have seen Clone Wars, I think, is Bo-Katan. Mm-hmm. Bo-Katan shows up. Katie Sackhoff voiced the character in those cartoons, and then she's here playing this character again.
And as the title heiress implies, she is last of her line. She's kind of she's Mandalorian royalty.
And as we find out later in the episode, that's
the thing. Getting to the Clone Wars stuff, there's this whole backstory with, like, she has an older sister who was in line for the throne, but she got killed somehow, and she had a relationship with Obi-Wan Kenobi of all people. Like I said, there's a lot of connections here that I don't fully understand, but yeah, she's a big deal on Mandalore, this Bo-Katan.
Yeah, probably going to be a pretty big deal in the show, I would think, but we'll see. Yeah. So
I don't think this is the last we've seen of Bo-Katan.
No,
that Mandalorian artifact, Darksaber thing that she's looking for, that's, you know, in the hands of the main villain this season. There's more to come.
And the way they set this up is, okay, there's three of them out here trying to steal weapons, but they make it pretty obvious that there's a lot more Mandalorians somewhere, right? They're not taking these weapons and using them themselves to reunite, to try and find this Darksaber. They're like distributing them to other Mandalorians. So if he ever needs, and that's the shocking thing, I guess, at the end of this, is he doesn't say, well, could you hook me up with some other Mandalorians? Like, I don't know. I guess maybe he doesn't want that. He just wants to find
some of y'all that don't take your helmet off, like a bunch of savages. No, it is interesting. Right. This idea of, like, the Mandalorian diaspora, like, there's they're all in exile. They're all, some of them are living as bounty hunters. Some of them are leaning on the old ways and the old religion. Some of them are trying to get their home world back. It's really fascinating, and it makes the world feel bigger.
Yeah, and we'll talk more about it when we get toward the end of this episode.
Just from a shot perspective, I love the scene of the Mandalorians blowing up the ship at sunset and jetting off like bottle rockets. I think that is a really, really pretty shot by Star Wars standards.
Sure. All right, so Mando arrives at his destination, I think, or maybe he goes... Yeah, he's got to go back to the port that they left from, because he goes to the frog people later. The Quarren show up to try and kill Baby Yoda, and the other Mando's flying behind them, again, dropping out of nowhere, bail him out, sit down for a drink with him, and they explain that they're stealing weapons from the port to try to retake Mandalore. They also dispel the myth that Mandalore is cursed, and he tells them about the mission he's on, and they agree to help him in exchange for help on their mission.
Yep. That's what we call the hook.
And she says, I can lead you to one of their kind, which I'm assuming she's talking about Baby Yoda.
Oh, interesting. I thought she was talking about Jedi, but I don't know.
Maybe.
What did you think of Katie Sackhoff?
I like her. I think she's great.
I like her a lot, too. How long ago did Battlestar Galactica come out? Because I also feel like she hasn't aged a day.
It's got to be like 2006 or something. It's a while ago.
Yeah, it's more than a decade ago. But yeah, I thought she makes a really, really damn good Mandalorian.
2004 is when it started.
Wow.
Ran for 6 years. So like 2010 is maybe the last we saw of her in that.
Because maybe if you wear a helmet out in the sun all the time, it's just like your skin doesn't get... You know, she takes it off, sure, but it's like just to have dinner and converse with people. If you wear a helmet most of the time, it's going to shield your face from the damage of the UV rays. So
it's true. It's true.
It's a good recommendation. Good health and beauty regimen recommendation. Wear a helmet. Mando's going to have a baby face. Baby face.
Oh, yeah.
I'm going to die at 70. No crow's feet. Not at all.
Good for him. Take your wins where you can get them.
You got to.
Anything else on that, or?
I don't think so. Yeah, okay. the Mandalorians just wreck shop here again. A lot of hand to hand Mando combat. Mando on Mando.
Yep. Then they take Mando to a freighter where some weapons are being loaded, and they plan this ambush. So they're gonna ambush the freighter and take the weapons. They're gonna wait till it goes out. What's the term for that? When you're kind of taxiing out to the port,
it's gotta be. And I was thinking about, like, man, does this make sense? And then when I saw it taking off and it's like making all these shockwaves and stuff, and I'm like, well, I guess that is kind of an asshole move if you're, you know, rocking the boats literally. But I'm like, how is this not an issue in any other port in any other planet? Yeah. Like if the backwash of a cruiser taking off is that intense, like why have we never seen ships taxi and be towed away from civilian populations? It does feel a little bit just so for this episode, but
for sure.
What are you going to do? It's an estuary planet. It's just it's all the whole planet is a fragile ecosystem that the New Republic, those bastards, have regulated the hell out of. And now you can't just take off your ship and fly because it disrupts. The reason these frog people had trouble conceiving is because of all the hypersonic gravity waves and you know, the whole planet's an estuary. That's it.
Yeah, it is just so, you know, they get a taxi out so far and then they can get out of atmosphere and then hyperspace jump.
Yeah.
Which that makes sense, right? You got to be out of atmosphere before you hyperspace.
Sure. Yeah. Yeah.
But yeah, we'll get there. Mando drops off Baby Yoda with the frog people during his time on this mission, and Baby Yoda eyes these eggs and he sees one that hatches.
Yeah, I was wondering, like, you know, most people were like, you know, didn't get out, been out of shape about Baby Yoda, the little genocide committer. Mm-hmm. But I was wondering, it's like, it's going to be a whole other level of real if he just like swallows one of these babies whole,
yeah,
like he would. And I kind of wondered, does this show got that in it? Is it going to be like, is there going to act comedy of like these parents being horrified that this little adorable thing is eating its children? Like they didn't. Turns out they got along real nice. Really
no,
cute.
I had a definite like the call is coming from inside the house moment when he dropped Baby Yoda off. Like you're putting the killer in the house. You can't. I thought the rest of the episode was going to be cutting back to him like sneaking out in the night, you know, under cover of darkness to chow down on a few eggs. But they
stuff
didn't really
as
do
as eggs in his face as he could.
Mm-hmm. So the Mandos land on the freighter, but the captain is alerted to their presence, forcing them to fight their way through an army of stormtroopers. The captain decides he's going to try to make the jump to hyperspace early, but he has to get out of the atmosphere first, and he begins climbing, and it's a race against time.
Yeah, they, you know, so much for the element of surprise. They surprise all the three stormtroopers, but it's probably more fun to watch these Mandalorians go commando than it is them sneaking around. And it lets him be kind of badass and infiltrate this thing under heavy fire. And there's a lot of fun things about like how badass the Mandos are. Like when you hear this fractured communication, like there's like got to be 10, 12 guys in here. It's a massive assault. And then the guys are scanned. There's only four life forms and they're Mandalorians. It's cool. I thought that stuff is really cool. What did you think of the Imperial Commander rocking the like non-estuary fog world heavy tan? Like I've never seen a tan Imperial before.
Yeah, he must have been like he must have just made this run coming straight off of Tatooine, right? Like the double suns he's been basking in for the last couple of months on leave or something.
Yeah. Yeah. Maybe his captain's quarters got like one of those Darth Vader chambers, except for instead of like a meditation, it's a tanning booth. Like,
all right,
like locks together and who interrupted my tanning session? Yeah, because he's glowing. This is a bronzed god compared to every other pasty Imperial we've ever seen.
It's true. Very true. So Bo-Katan tells they vent a bunch of people into space, but not into space. Like there's still an atmosphere. Is there a big enough pressure differential to suck somebody out of a ship in this scenario?
At some point in the dive that they make later on, they talk about they're at like 10-12,000 feet. I don't know, maybe get a little vacuum going, but also like if the ship is like at a 35 degree angle you bust open the thing, I don't know, maybe.
Okay, that's fair.
It was
fair.
A
they
sick shot. Yeah, like these Mandalorians having these guys, like these Imperial, giving this like, we got to hold this room at all costs until we hit hyperspace versus the reality of the Mandalorians just mowing them down and this guy's pissing his pants and shut it all the door. Yeah, I thought that's pretty high adventure comedy Star Wars. And then they all die. They all get sucked out and they die horribly.
Yeah, nobody, just don't think about that.
Yeah, but and yeah. Also, stormtrooper armor is completely useless.
Oh,
like, if
yeah.
this shit can't even seal, like, if you're wearing a full helmet and, like, supposedly, like, this provides protection to partial vacuum and a flashbang takes you out, just take it off. go to war in a thong because it's doing nothing but encumbering your vision, man.
Yeah. You think with all that Imperial stamped Beskar, they could have, like, made some decent armor, you know? Like, look how much abuse the Mandalorian's armor takes.
He
takes 50, 60, 100, 1,000 blaster shots. He's fine.
Not a scorch mark on it. I guess that's why Beskar's worth a lot of money.
Yeah. So Bo-Katan tells the captain, we're going to take the entire ship, which surprises Mando. He feels he's lived up to his end of the bargain, but she says, I'm not going to help you out until we take the ship. And so he goes along with it.
She altered the terms of the deal.
She did.
I almost thought they were going to go for some Star Wars wordplay there, and they didn't, that's fine.
Yeah,
maybe
some of
that stuff is too on the nose.
Show a little restraint.
Yeah, I think I'm coming down on that side too.
So Moff Gideon calls. You might remember him from the end of last season.
Oh, yeah.
He asked the captain about the situation on the ship. It looks like the Mandos are going to take it, Mandalorians rather. So the captain dives back into the atmosphere, intent on sinking the ship, killing everyone aboard.
So is this like an offshoot faction? I mean, obviously it's an offshoot of the Empire because the Emperor is dead. But like, is this a Path of the Child or whatever version of the Empire? Like, is like there? It's this little Bane. This little no, brother. They're expecting 3 corpses on the transport. Kind of. The flames grow higher, like, you know, a suicide cult.
Bite
down on a tooth and fry your brains kind of outfit. I thought that was interesting because the Empire has always been kind of hardcore, you know, stormtroopers mentally conditioned to serve the Empire of unswerving loyalty, et cetera, et cetera. But this is pretty hardcore.
I mean, there's definitely like a power vacuum. Like, you look at the state of the rebels at the end of Return of the Jedi, right? They're not equipped to take over the duties of the entire galaxy. So, like, because the Empire had so many planets under its control. I guess, like, you just say, hey, we're opening it back up, and now the New Republic is going to kind of be an umbrella thing over the top of that, but we're not going to need the strict enforcement and everything, all of the infrastructure that the Empire had, because we're not going to be those kind of people.
Well, especially since I think in the new understanding of the canon is like all that stuff that, you know, where they had a New Republic and Leia was the president and everything was kind of peaceful, like that's gone. Like, I think you've got 20 years of constant civil war.
It seems to the extent that
some of these imperial factions have got the, you know, now the legitimate government's the resistance somehow.
Yeah.
So the Mandalorian seems like they're advancing that. Like, this the galaxy had no peace between Endor, the fall of the Death Star 2 at Endor, and, you know, the end of the final Force Awakens series. What was that called? Jesus.
Return of Skywalker.
Rise of Skywalker.
Rise of Skywalker. Yeah.
Yeah, the whole galaxy's just been having a hard time.
It seems like it, which makes me wonder, you know, how much the rebels are really going to have luck changing the galaxy after that too, because they're in a roughly similar position.
Well, it's called Star Wars, Jim, not Star Peace and Security. So
true.
It's a bad sign for that galaxy. Bad news. We're 10,000 years of peace and security, and we just started tuning in the bad part. So
it's true. So to get them off the ship before they all die, they have to get to the bridge, or at least, you know, Bo-Katan's not leaving until they do. So Mando takes a bunch of laser bolts to his armor, and he uses his thermal detonators to blow up a bunch of stormtroopers. They make it to the bridge just in time to get the captain to pull the ship up. And then Bo-Katan demands that the captain take her to Moff Gideon so she can get her darksaber back. He kills himself instead. And then Bo-Katan invites Mando to rejoin them sometime in the future and tells him to go to the city of Kaladin on the planet Corvus to find Ahsoka Tano.
the forest world of Corvus, which is some kind of Latin for crow. I wonder if that's going to be important.
It's probably just going to be like a nature preserve, right? Like that's the forest crows. Planet here.
Yeah.
Like or, this is the estuary planet, then the forest planet's mm-hmm. just like an arboretum or something.
Yeah.
On a desert yeah. planet. I don't know.
Yeah. I thought the Imperial, I alluded to, but that Imperial's suicide tooth that like just fried his brains with electricity, I thought was really cool.
Yeah, they do an effect like the Emperor blasting you with his electrical powers, right? Like,
yeah, you could see the dude's skull. It's pretty slick.
It's cool.
You know, there's like, I thought, you know, we talked about how the Mando had this culture shock, but the one thing they're able to agree on at the end is like, you know, your bravery will not be forgotten. It is mm-hmm. the way. Like, Mandalorians, when you get down to it, can still agree that, you know, random acts of bravery and violence is pretty fucking cool, pretty sweet. Even if it doesn't make a lot of sense, like his last stand to, again, you stagger forward 16 feet to throw a thermal detonator. When I just saw you roll three of these like 30 meters as seen before, I don't know.
Yeah.
I don't know. Seems kind of kooky, but
we had two
Besker folks.
He had one in each hand, so maybe.
So the other thing I thought is like they had access to all these cool Mandalorian weapons, like these heavy repeaters and blasters and stuff. I thought that would be a much bigger part of retaking the ship, but it was just like, you know, Mando tanking a bunch of shots and throwing some balls. As far as I know, the Mandalorians did not take any of the weapons from the crate. I thought that was odd. I was really expecting like, oh man, like, because this is very video game-ish. Like, you level up, you know, the Baby Yoda's pram got destroyed. He gets a new one built by the Umgot, and it's got armored shielding and all that stuff. And this one got destroyed now by the Mama Core. And he's probably going to get a new one. It's going to have a manipulator arm or maybe blasters so the Baby Yoda can be a more active part in things. But I thought this was going to be like, oh, now the Mando is going to, he's going to have his disintegrator rifle. He's going to have his quick draw pistol. And now he's going to have like an ion grenade launcher or some shit. Mm-hmm. I didn't get that, unfortunately.
He's going to get one of those mech suits that Snowball gets in Rick and Morty.
Yeah.
Baby Yoda. There you go. Freaking power armor mech
Full on Baby Yoda power armor.
Yeah.
I do think that like if you want to know more about Bo-Katan and maybe where the story is going for, I you know, and you got Disney Plus, obviously. It's got the whole Clone Wars. You just go to season 7, episode 9 through 12, and that's the meat of that story. And it kind of starts in the middle of the action, and you gotta take a couple things for granted. But you know what you kind of did in Revenge of the Sith? Like, Obi-Wan and Anakin are just best friends now.
Yeah.
Like it's that kind of like, oh, it feels like I should know more things, but you'll figure it out. It's not a big deal. But it might be good homework if you want to really get into the Darksaber, Mandalorian in exile lore. It's a good place to start.
And if you haven't actually watched any of that stuff and you've only seen the mainline movies, you are minorly familiar with Ahsoka Tano. Ahsoka Tano is a Jedi who was trained under Anakin Skywalker, went into hiding when the Empire came to power, and then joined the Rebels. And eventually she was one of the Jedi spirits who talked to Rey as she was fighting the Emperor, Darth Sidious, at the end
of
Rise of Skywalker. Yeah, she's one of the voices who spoke to her and encouraged her to get back up. So
interesting. I've only seen that movie once.
Same here.
Same here.
But apparently, like, I've read this obviously on Wikipedia.
Gotcha.
I didn't know that off the top of the dome. But yeah, so
that's cool.
Minor link to Rey in the movies, and we'll see more of her. Probably next episode, maybe one after that. I don't know.
Yeah. I thought it was cute that Baby Yoda loves the frog babies. And the frog baby loves Baby Yoda. Baby frog, Baby Yoda, cute off. And like when they're separated, they both were squeaking and squealing for each other. Like they were like best friends already. That was cute. Right.
I wasn't sure if Baby Yoda wanted to eat the thing or be friends with it. It was scary.
I thought so too. On my second watch, like I wondered if it's like you're supposed to realize that. But then the second watch, I noticed that the baby frog was kind of making, it was trying to get the Baby Yoda too. Like, no, they actually had a lot, had some kind of friendship. So I thought that was cute. I also love like the Mando bailing out of the freighter and like skydiving until he activated his jet is such a cool. I love him having the jetpack.
Yeah.
It really adds a lot of dynamicism, and it also allows him to do a lot of cool death from above type stuff. But gosh, it's just give me Rocketeer vibes. I love it.
Yeah. No, it's great. Like you said, Mando jumps out of that freighter. He goes back, picks up Baby Yoda, who's playing with that tadpole. He goes to the port where Mando's not super happy about the state of his ship, but he pays anyway. And the ship barely flies now. It's a bumpy ride is an understatement. And then Baby Yoda eats this squid creature that's stowed away on the ship.
The poison head crab. I like how they film it like it's... that's not what it really is, but I thought that's what it looked like.
Like a Half-Life 2, or a Half-Life kind
of
thing.
Yeah.
Yeah.
But it's Slytherin, and you like I the whole time it's happening, I'm like, well, they're playing a bunch of scary music, but one of two things is going to happen. Number one, Baby Yoda just eats it, because that's the funny, you know, that's the funny thing. Or Mandalorian's going to kill it. Turns out, I was both right. Mandalorian crushes it, and then you like 3 seconds later, you cut back to the Baby Yoda finishing it off, which I thought. And I love the line where I love this Mon Cal guy, because... You know, the Mandalorian's like, I gave you 1,000 credits, and the guy just passes like, just sign here, get the fuck out. And then when he gets into his ship, he sits down and goes, Mon Calamari, unbelievable. Which, as a Star Wars fan, I thought it's funny, because like, I have positive associations with Mon Calamari, you know, Admiral Akbar, real stand up dude, hero of the New Republic, of the Rebellion. But here, apparently, maybe Mon Calamari are also famous for being a ripoff artist when it comes to fixing up your ship.
Apparently. I don't know. This is one of the most fun things for me, is just to see how the Razor Crest is changing. And this is almost like a marketing thing where you could, or whatever, a plot to sell toys or something. You could sell the different stages of the Razor Crest. And I would be totally cool if by the end of this series... the Razor Crest was unrecognizable. Like, has, you know...
different engines.
Yeah, it's got the engines off a Star Destroyer, like an engine off a Star Destroyer or something strapped to the back of it, and its old engines are gone, and they're replaced with laser turrets from, you know, the Millennium Falcon, from those...
Absolutely.
I don't know. You could do so much with this and go so far down that road. I would love to see that.
I would too. And it reminds me back in the day, I know they sold TIE Fighter and X-Wings where they had decals where you could out of the box, you could make it into like a pristine X-Wing, or you could like put decals that made it look like it had scorch marks and battle damage.
Nice.
On its side panels and whatnot. And you could do that at the Razor Crest pretty easily.
Oh God, they could make a whole set. I mean, you could make a great Lego set from that where you can reconfigure it into any form.
Just before we sat down to record, I noticed that they have a Razor Crest Lego set that looks really fucking cool.
That one's pretty badass.
Assemble it as battle damaged, or you can just do your own. Like, you know, it's Lego. Hey,
true.
Don't put it. Make sure this kit doesn't have any right angles in it, because nothing is hanging straight or working correctly.
Get a Tantive IV model and strap an engine to the back of it. Why not?
Yeah.
That'd be sweet. But that's it. That's the episode. Pretty good.
I love also the way the Razor Crest hyperspaced out, and then a single panel of it fell off and like twisted in space. Like, perfect. I loved it.
Hey, it's time for another season of Why is Mr. Feeny a Car? The premise is simple. A Gen Xer and a millennial watch old 80s action TV to see what still works and what doesn't. In previous seasons, we've done podcasts for Knight Rider, Airwolf, MacGyver, A-Team, and more. However, this year we're doing a very special season of Feeny. We're going back and reviewing the very special episodes of 80s and 90s sitcoms. Come cringe along with us as Hollywood tries to warn our families of the dangers of underage smoking, drug abuse, alcoholism, eating disorders, and much more. We start out with the episode of Boy Meets World where a high school kid gets sucked into a cult. Worlds collide as the Mr. Feeny finally makes an appearance on Why is Mr. Feeny a Car? Join me and my buddy Jay each week for episodes full of nostalgia and secondhand embarrassment. And don't worry, a very special isn't your speed. We've also got some all-time classic Knight Rider episodes to close the season with. Find Why is Mr. Feeny a Car each Wednesday on Bald Move Pulp starting April 3rd. We're about 10 weeks out from House of the Dragon Season 2, and it's time to prepare for war.
Which in our case means, well, watching a lot of Hot D and reading a lot of Fire and Blood.
Each week between now and June 16th, Maester Anthony and his co-host Steve are hosting a watch of each episode of Hot D Season 1. And then me and Jim are going to host a discussion of the differences between the events on that episode and how they're recounted in George R.R. Martin's historical tome, Fire and Blood.
That's right, I've resorted to reading dragon books. God help us all. We'll see if my fresh eyes add any new insights or predictions into Season 2.
Arm yourselves with all the lore you can for the battles ahead. House of the Dragon returns June 16th, but we've got you covered until then.
Check out all of our upcoming Hot D coverage on the Hot D feed or on Bald Move Pulp, available wherever you listen to podcasts.
Well, that's it for the episode. Let's talk about feedback. We got a couple to consider. Mando@baldmove.com is how you get your hyperspace transmissions to us. First up, Eric in Nashville said, you guys are talking about how you thought it was cool in the latest episode that they were roasting the crate dragon meat on a spit over what looked like some sort of pod racer engine. We are a big Disney World family and have been to the Galaxy's Edge at Hollywood Studios. And in there is a little restaurant called the Ronto Roasters, where you can get a Ronto wrap that is exactly how they want you to believe they're cooking the Ronto meat.
Nice.
Of course, it's all for show and theming, but when my family is sitting down watching the episode, we thought for sure it was a nod to that. I've included a couple of photos of what it looks like. I think you're right, because the mouse does one thing, cross promotion and world building. And the picture should just, yeah, just a big hunk of meat. There's a engine over it cooking it. And there's like a little recommissioned battle droid kind of like turning the spit, like animatronic style.
Awesome.
When COVID all blows over, I would love to get a chance, because like this thing kind of debuted and then the country went on lockdown. But I definitely want to go and check it out because it does look cool.
Yeah.
So it looks like a real treat for Star Wars fans.
Together and go do that. That'd be fun.
That'd be super fun because I know my kids with a child to go down there too.
Yeah.
So, but yeah, thanks for sharing it with us, Eric. Moving on to Renee. Last episode, Mando says, may the force be with you. And the X-Wing pilot responded, and also with you. Is it me or is this the first time and also with you has been uttered by a Star Wars or uttered in a Star Wars thing? I've heard it said amongst friends and on the internet, and I've said it myself as it's a funny homage to the Catholics, may the Lord be with you and also with you, but I've never heard it in official Star Wars sense. I feel like that Han and Luke and like Han and Lando exchanged a couple may the force be with yous. But I don't think it was and also with you is more like that,
right,
you,
right.
Or you too. Yeah.
Yeah. I don't know that also with you has been used before, but definitely may the force be with you has been used a lot.
Yeah. I wonder if, cause it makes sense like after the war and like the, you know, you had a prominent Jedi that was like the hero of the rebellion. I wonder if like, as hard as the Empire worked to stamp out the religion of the Jedi, I wonder if it's like really resurged.
Mm-hmm.
Kind of like we're seeing like there's a little, you know, in the last 10 years or so, there's been a resurgence of kind of hippie culture, like crystals and healing and horoscopes and whatnot. Like it's a cultural cycle that's come back around. So now the Empire has fallen. It's cool to be with the Jedi because like what is a and also I guess it's like the man. OK, so like the Mandalorian doesn't believe in a force. Right. But I imagine like New Republic X-Wing fighters would kind of be up on, you know, a big part of the force because it seemed like the rebels really leaned into that as counterculture to the Imperials.
Yeah, I mean, if they're gonna lean into that, they've been doing a lot with like making more Jedi. You know, when the original trilogy aired, you were like, oh, the last of the Jedi is not, you know, Rey or whatever. It's Yoda. He's literally the last, like the only one left. And when he died, it was a huge thing. And Luke had to become, you know, this Jedi to keep that going. But now they've just thrown in a whole, there are Jedi everywhere. Like Ahsoka Tano has been out there. Like there are Jedi all like scattered all across the galaxy. We just didn't know about them. Yeah. Yeah. Tons of Jedi out there. They're just not making themselves known.
The mad clone Jedi or whatever.
Yeah.
That's what we found out in Expanded Universe. You turn over a rock in the galaxy and there's a Jedi hiding there.
Yeah. kind of made them less special. But also more capable. Like, you could believe that the Jedi could have influence again if there were more of them.
Sure.
Because it just Luke was kind of disheartening.
Right. Got to get that thing started up again. Britt B says, hey guys, your Star Wars knowledge exceeds my own. Well, we'll see about that. Oh, and these last few episodes have had planet hopping and the time it takes to travel through space and atmosphere. Could you expound upon the following questions? Am I correct in understanding that hyperspeed is nearly instantaneous and allows preset routes through the galaxy? Or does it take longer to hyperjump to somewhere further, like Tatooine, which is on the edge of the galaxy?
I think that latter is true. I think it takes longer. Yeah. It's not instant, but it definitely speeds it up significantly.
But Star Wars hyperdrive is way faster than almost any other science fiction universe's speed. Like, you could, the Millennium Falcon can get from... where did the Alderaan, at the core of the galaxy, to Tatooine, or from Tatooine to Alderaan in a matter of hours, if not days. And like Wikipedia talks about, like, maybe slow civilian freighters taking a month or two to go across the galaxy, whereas like a very fast ship like Han Solo could circumnavigate the galaxy in like a week or so. And there's two main things: the speed of the hyperdrive itself, and then like the sophistication of your hyperspace computer, because like, you know, you got this, the power of the engines can propel you through hyperspace faster, but you also have the in hyperspace is all about, like, you have to dodge huge gravity wells. Like, one of the ways you can pull a ship out of hyperspace is these interdictor cruisers that can simulate a gravity well, and it triggers the hyperspace computer to shut down. So if you, the more sophisticated of a hyperdrive or a hyperspace computing system you've got, the closer it can plot you to those gravity wells. So instead of taking this very circuitous path, you can go like a much straighter path if you have a sophisticated drive.
Which is why the original movies, when Han's describing how fast he can make the Kessel run, he uses a unit of distance to measure it.
Right.
Instead of a unit
of time.
It's a more
efficient path. Yeah. There's like tons of different ways that they've explained that over the years. But that's
right.
And that's why the Millennium Falcon's like the fastest hunk of junk in the galaxy. It has like way oversized engines, and also it has like this insane system of like 7 droid brains wired together in series. It's like all slapdash, but it's a hot rod, it's a chopper, right?
Yeah.
So I think that's that gets you most of the questions. Now, the other burning question you have, which I don't really have a great answer for, is how do we know how fast a ship travels if it forgoes hyperspeed and mainly travels through space? No. Even at near light speed, it would take so long to go from one planetary system from one solar system to the next, that a lot of times, for example, you got the situation in the classic series too, Empire Strikes Back. Han gets dumped the Millennium Falcon gets dumped in space with a non-functional hyperdrive in the Hoth system. And the closest system is the Inowat system, which has the gas giant Bespin, and he's going to go there. How long did it take? Like, how long did it take for them on sublight to get there? You don't really know. Like, Luke Skywalker was training with Yoda the whole time. Probably a few months. Somewhere between 4 weeks to 6 months, right? Is probably how long it took him to travel. Mm-hmm. But that's not like... But I don't know. Maybe is the Star Wars galaxy denser than ours? I don't know, because it doesn't seem like it makes much sense that you could go from one star system to the next, a sublight. So you kind of gotta, taking this frog to an interstellar system or intrastellar system? In which case, why would he want a hyperdrive to there? Like, just fucking drive, man.
It doesn't seem like any. I think they said it was one sector over, which a sector is pretty big.
I would think it's anything. If you don't have faster than light speed, is a long ways away. And when we're talking about like cosmic distances, so I think some of this is that you gotta. It's sci-fi fantasy. You gotta lean on the fantasy a lot. They also ask, if you don't count The Force Awakens, starships must descend into the atmosphere from space after they've left hyperspeed. Is that because they could jump to hyperspeed within a planet atmosphere, which one of the many times the new sequel series blew my fucking mind as a Star Wars nerd.
Yeah.
How long do you suspect it would take to travel from one planet to the next using hyperspeed? The bottom line is the hyperdrive. Yeah. Hyperdrive travels at the speed of plot. If If you need to make your battle by at the last minute, you're going to make it. If you need it to take 6 weeks, well, oh wow, this planet, this space is full of globular clusters and black holes, and you got to really take this like crazy labyrinth path. It's like it's whatever you need in the plot. So
yeah, this is not The Expanse. Like, they're not sweating those kinds of details.
No, we're not. No, this is not anything like this. This is very sci-fi fantasy. The rule of cool is law, and you just don't try to worry about it too much. So, but I think that's the way to understand. It's ultimately how fast a plot needs it to be, and also the bullshit technical manual stuff. I think we were able to communicate to you. So, thanks for the questions, Brent. If you have some questions about the Mando or some comments or just want to leave feedback otherwise, it's easy to send us a note, mando@baldmove.com, or you can discuss each episode on our forums, forums.baldmove.com, with your fellow fans. That's it for us with The Mandalorian. We'll be back next week to see what the exploits of Baby Yoda. Maybe we'll get some more baby frogs. You know, maybe a baby Mando. Is Baby Yoda now a baby Mando?
I couldn't imagine a baby Mando. Why not? Get a foundling, put a helmet on it, done.
He is I wonder if that's where they're going. Like, are you going to have, like, Baby Yoda in a little hat with ears and, you know, being trained? He gets his backpack. Like, yeah.
Perfect.
Yeah. Yeah. Season 23 of The Mandalorian. The Mandalorian dies and Baby Yoda takes his mantle. That's what I'm here for.
With his little pram thing busted, could we see a jetpack with a built-in pouch for Baby Yoda?
Oh, my God.
Is that possible?
Yeah. Yeah. Like a little, a double-decker thing. Yeah, mm-hmm. Like what Yoda used to ride Luke. You got backpack Baby Yoda.
Exactly.
Or is it the chest sling? Is it like, okay. You know, it's like you got him the baby carrier, just he's hanging out front.
He takes a lot of shots to the chest, yeah.
He takes a lot of shots to the chest. But on the other hand, Baby Yoda's feet going to be next to the hot thrusters. That scares me.
It's true.
Build that thing out of asbestos or whatever the Star Wars non-cancer causing equivalent would be. Hyperfiber.
Yeah. We'll see.
Carbosteel fibers is what you want to weave that out of. If that doesn't exist, someone put it in Wikipedia. We'll see you next time. Until then, I'm Aaron.
And I'm Jim.
Later.